Southern Oregon and Northern California are historically popular places to grow cannabis, but recent challenges, including the abuse and wage theft of workers on illegal farms, have brought unwanted attention to the cannabis industry. Robert Hammer is the Special Agent in Charge for Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, in the Pacific Northwest. He sat down with JPR's Roman Battaglia to discuss the state of illegal cannabis in our region and how law enforcement is helping victims of human trafficking.
Well, Robert, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Yeah, no, excited to.
I'm curious, you know, how have human trafficking cases and the situation been, you know, last year? We've seen sort of this situation involving illegal marijuana and these migrant workers being abused evolve over the years. And I'm just curious how things had been last year.
You know, I think we've, my assessment, and again, this is just my assessment, is that we kind of had a lull in the action last year. We've really tried to come at these organizations in a unified and coordinated fashion for several years now, at least from our perspective, looking at it from the trafficking angle, bringing a lot of additional resources down to that area to really understand the problem set. I think we've gotten word that some of these organizations are looking to, let's just say, diversify their geographic footprint, and may have chosen other states to set up shop in besides Oregon. And so not to say that we've solved the problem, not to say that we're not planting a flag in the ground saying claiming success here. But what I'm saying is I think that the organizations are starting to feel the pressure and the attention that's being placed on them. And that is counterintuitive to what they need in order to be successful. And they like to lay low. They like to, you know, go out into the remote areas and just do their own thing and make money and be done with it. But when they get all this scrutiny, when they get this attention, not only about marijuana, but now the fact that, you know, folks think that they are trafficking victimizing these folks in support of their operations. Environmental groups are becoming aware of the damage that's taking place to the water tables out there, the pesticides that are being smuggled into the country to kill all the animals, to protect the crops. There's a lot of negative attention that's been placed on this problem set. And I think that that's creating pressure on these organizations that are saying, maybe we might want to think about setting, you know, building a farm or setting up our operation maybe somewhere else that doesn't quite have the amount of heat on it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, conclusion sort of comes to similar thoughts of when I've talked with other groups locally here, is that they've seen that sort of lull in these like huge operations and major stuff happening last year. And it sounds like from what you're saying that it seems like it's due in part because there's all of this aggressive action and there's all of this like heat and attention placed on, you know, illegal marijuana and all of the stuff that's going on down here. And that's why, you know, groups might be going somewhere else because they don't want all the attention on them.
Yeah. And I think it's again, I think as we couch this, I've always been cautious in couching it as illegal marijuana. And I would encourage folks to look, and I think that this is why we've had broader success. I think, you know, if you say marijuana in Oregon, I think you're going to get a very divisive perspective of folks that are like, marijuana, like who's interested in that, right? Why are we spending federal resources on marijuana, right? But if I tell you that there's people dying, that there's people being exploited, there's human trafficking, that the environment's being damaged, that animals are being killed, that are all the derivative byproducts of this action, I think it's easier for people to coalesce around the fact that there's a problem. And so I think that education that we've done in the aggressive messaging and marketing, as well as the combined enforcement that we've brought to the table, has had a positive impact. That, as you talk about that lull that you're the folks that you've spoken to have sensed, I think we sense it as well. I think we're on guard for a resurgence in the next season, but we will certainly, I think we are better postured because of the relationships that we've built, not only at the local law enforcement level, but also with our advocacy groups, to be more responsive to this threat should there be another heightened activity in that space.
Yeah. So while it might be lulled and there wasn't as much activity last year, you know, things could certainly pick up again if people kind of forget about what was going on and kind of things die down again, they might move back in. And so things have to people have to remain on watch, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, ultimately, Oregon provides a really fertile ground and great farming conditions for the crop. And so it's always going to be a desirable place to grow marijuana. And the state regulates that, but we are here to make sure that in conducting grows that the population is not being victimized by human traffickers in conducting those operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people that I've talked to down here have mentioned that part of the problem for a lot of these workers is that some of these, you know, raids and investigations and all these things are happening, you know, reactive to this illegal marijuana farm already existing and propping up and learning about this later. And really, a lot of people have said that, you know, law enforcement needs to be more proactive in preventing these human trafficking cases and, you know, keeping these cartels and other organized groups from coming up and starting the farms in the first place so that these people don't get exploited and are not coming up from other countries maybe to on the promise of, you know, getting paid when they end up not getting paid in the first place. And I'm just wondering how HSI itself is, you know, working on being more proactive in preventing this stuff from happening.
Yeah. So obviously every single day that goes by that somebody's being victimized is a day too long. We would obviously want to get these on the front side and shut this down on the front side if we could. That's where we, I believe, that continued engagement in open lines of communication with our advocacy groups, with recognizing the early signs of trafficking, with information sharing across all levels of state and local governments with us to add value and perspective to what's going on the ground down there, I think will help us move the needle towards a more proactive response versus a reactive response. I think there's also some enablers that, while I can't get into specifics because they're ongoing investigations, I do foresee us looking at, let's just say, the supply chain of these organizations, the things that they rely on to set these things up. Where are they breaking the laws at state and federal levels in order to set up shop in Southern Oregon to enable them to now bring in traffic the victims in to facilitate the activity on that place? And so, and I've said before, I think on some press releases we've done, you know, we're talking, you know, how are they getting the land? How are they financing these things? What are the, we talked about the supply chain. Where are, who's providing some of the supplies, looking at targeting the illegal shipments of pesticides across the border that are coming up? All the tools of the trade, if you will, that they need on the front side before the workers even hit the ground up there. And so we're really trying to, again, shift the perspective back a little bit where we can get in there sooner, identify these players sooner, and again, open up the lines of communication with the community at large, because ultimately these are very remote areas and it's very hard to surveil or keep your finger on the pulse in some of these areas. And so, but ultimately making the community aware of the problem set and giving the community an option to say, hey, something's off here. I know who is working on this problem or potential problem. Let me just share this information with them. And that can kick off a whole series of events that could be life-changing for some trafficking victims. And so I do share that desire to become more proactive and less reactive, but I'm confident based upon the data that I've seen and again on the investigations we have ongoing that we are taking steps in the right direction to move that needle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, specifically, it sounds like there were two major things of like engaging with some of these non-governmental groups, these like advocacy groups in terms of helping get the word out about, you know, why you shouldn't be getting involved in these, you know, or how to identify whether or not this is human trafficking or whether this is a sketchy workplace to work in or, you know, how to report this stuff and all that sort of thing. And then also targeting the like supply chain aspect of these grows, whether it's like the people who might be leasing the land to these growers, you know, and turning a blind eye on it or not even checking their stuff in the first place, or, you know, the people who are actually delivering the goods of the hothouses and the pesticides and all of that sort of stuff to enable them to build these farms in the first place.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if we have to move beyond, as you point out, simply going in there and there's value in the eradication effort, but we have to look more holistically at what is supporting those operations. And so I think that that's what we're really trying to do. And as you talked about, you know, again, engagement with our advocacy groups, Unite has been a great partner for us down there. And I think one of the things I've stressed is building the trust. We have to build the trust as law enforcement with the communities that we serve. And we need those victims to be able to come forward, and they have to trust that when they do take that proactive step to come forward, and that step, that's that first step, it's really the hardest step for them, that there's going to be somebody that's going to listen, and that's going to be responsive, and that's going to be protective of them when they do come forward. And so that's really one of the key goals that we're trying to establish as we engage with the community down there.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about building that trust, I think that's a big thing I've heard from these groups, is that like making sure that these workers who often might be undocumented or afraid of going to a law enforcement agency, it's really hard for them to get them to speak out about, you know, these abuses that are happening because they're afraid of what's going to happen to them. I was doing some reading before this and saw that you were involved in a lawsuit about a raid on a meatpacking plant in Tennessee a little bit ago about an IRS warrant and arresting a lot of people just based on their race. Or at least that was in the complaint. And I'm just wondering how you do build that trust with these workers on illegal marijuana farms, you know, how they can trust an agency that might be involved in some of these other things or, you know, in complaints in other parts of the country.
Yeah, no, I mean, so every situation is different, and I can't comment on the litigation you referenced. But what I will tell you is that the department, as most recently as this month, through Secretary Mayorkas, has doubled down on his commitment towards a victim-centered approach, prioritizing the victims of human trafficking, making sure that we are consistently and proactively applying the protections that they are entitled to by law. And so I think that's the approach that we're taking in Southern Oregon. I think that the results of our engagement in Southern Oregon in this space for the past couple of years speak volumes to whether victims can trust us or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like that recently that there's been more of a shift on a victim-centered approach and making sure that these people who are involved in this stuff are getting those protections applied, you know, before they get involved in all sorts of legal stuff so that they know that they are, you know, protected. Because I know when I've talked with some other legal people, they've mentioned specifically the protections, like if you are involved in this human trafficking stuff, you do have protections from getting deported and stuff. And those are things that they have to make sure that those are afforded to them.
That's correct. Whether it's deferred actions or T or U visas, those are enacted by law to specifically protect these types of individuals and these victims. And so, but it's making that information widely available and making sure the victims understand their rights in order to facilitate that trust. That's so important.
Yeah. And lastly, you know, what are we sort of expecting in the coming years then involving this human trafficking and illegal marijuana in the region?
I think you can expect more. I think you can expect some. I'm hopeful that we will have some federal prosecutions out of this that will be, you know, publicly information in the federal court that the folks can see that, you know, we have been investing heavily in educating the community in working with our state and local partners down there to identify these organizations that are trafficking these individuals to maximize their profit. And we want to demonstrate to the community that we're responsive, not only through continued outreach and engagement, but also some criminal prosecutions that hopefully put these traffickers behind bars.
Great. Well, Robert, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on and asking some questions, and feel free to stay in touch, and we'll keep you posted on how this thing develops.